If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this special Halloween podcast of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth has an exclusive conversation with comic book writer and Walking Dead creator Robert Kirkman. Listen as they discuss their shared lifelong passion for comics and how it wasn't always shared with their loved ones. Now let's go to Seth and Robert Kirkman.
Happy Halloween, everybody. This is the Late Night Podcast. I'm here with Robert Kirkman. How are you? Thank you for being on theme. And we won't name the hotel, although we probably should, but let's not. Your hotel is on theme. Your New York City hotel is on theme with Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, if ants are on theme with Halloween, sure,
you have ants in your room.
I do. They gave me a little welcome bowl of, like, nuts, and it had some kind of gelatin thing in it, and I was like, oh, that's real nice of them to do. And then I looked over, and there were ants crawling all over it, and I was like, oh, that's bad, and I put it in the trash can. And then I've been working at the desk a little bit because I get a little bit of free time, and I got ants crawling on my hands and stuff while I'm working.
So this is a serious ant problem.
Yeah, I got in the car to come here, and I'm talking to my publicist because, you know, I'm one of those kind of people. And I looked at my hand, and there was an ant crawling on it. And I was like, well, I'm just like a guy covered in ants now. That's just my life.
Now, I feel like we should have checked you before you came in. For all we know now, you've brought this ant problem with you.
Like, next thing you know, it'll be New York infested with ants. The whole town.
So we got a chance to talk on the show earlier this week. But I wanted to ask you some extra stuff. I didn't have time to ask you this. When did you first starting writing comics? What was the beginning of that for you?
I first started writing comics when I was 19.
Oh, okay.
I didn't go to college. I had no real prospects in life.
Uh-huh.
And I worked at a comic book store.
Oh,
and
that's helpful.
And I kind of knew. Did you say that's helpful or
it
that's
is helpful?
Awful? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. That always struck me as kind of a dream job.
It's fun.
At 19.
Yeah, because, I mean, most of it is just sitting there reading comics and being mean to customers. I mean, that's kind of a prerequisite.
So that is not just a stereotype. You guys would admit that you were mean to customers. I always felt...
Not on purpose. I mean, it's with a helpful tone, you know? There's your favorite books, and you're always trying to, like, push your favorite books on people, and they're not liking that most of the time. They're like, I just want to... It's like if you went to the grocery store, and they were like, you love chocolate milk, right? You got to try this chocolate milk. And it's like, no, I don't. I'm diabetic. Can I just get a gallon of white milk? And
was there... Yeah. If we equate it with the music shop employees, sort of John Cusack and High Fidelity, let's say. Is there... Were there comics that when people bought it, you just thought, ugh, you're not a real comic fan?
Yeah, that's a real bummer for me, because that sometimes happens in the shop, because I buy a lot of, like, guilty pleasure comics.
Yeah.
But I would never do that, because that is something that does happen
a lot.
Yeah, you know, I've got it before. Like, what are you buying that for?
Is guilty pleasure, again, I don't want to besmirch, is that just sort of your big main heroes? Is that what counts as guilty? What is guilty pleasures?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's... Geez, you put me on the spot.
I did. So maybe this is too hard to answer. But is it sort of, are we thinking like Marvel and DC, like Main Street comics? Is that what counts as guilty pleasure?
I mean, that does to me, just because I'm a hardcore, like, independent comics
Like
guy. So sometimes when I go to the counter with my Captain America. I'm like, just don't tell anybody, all right? But yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's other stuff.
You start writing when you're 19, but you started your own independent publishing.
Yeah, because no one would publish me.
Gotcha. So this was not a thirst to be an entrepreneur. This was out of necessity.
Well, I decided that my first book would be this thing called Battle Pope.
I remember we talked about Battle Pope the first time you were on
the
show.
Oh, okay. Well, I won't repeat myself. But
Please. For those who are listening.
I just thought, no one knows who I am. And I was working with this artist, Tony Moore, and nobody knew who he was. And I was like, no one's going to buy a book based on us. So we need to have some reason for people to buy the book. So I was like, I guess controversy works. And then I was thinking, you know, Battle Pope, like if I heard there's a book coming out called Battle Pope, I would want to know more about it.
Sure.
You know, just from the title. And so I thought that would be a good thing to do. But it turns out publishers were like, yeah, no, we don't want to publish a book called Battle Pope.
When you then published it, did it turn out that people wanted to ask you about it? Did you get a little bit of a press bump?
I mean, it sold, at the time, a lot of independent comics would get orders of like 700 or 800, uh-huh. and we got orders of like 1,500.
Which
our distributor was like, you're doing great. And I was like, really? How much money am I going to make? Oh, you're not going to make any money.
So what was the run of Battle Pope? How many issues was
it? Oh, we ended up doing 14 I am the most stubborn man on the planet.
Oh, that's great. So you stuck it out.
Not at any point was that book ever successful.
Did you feel like in those 14 issues you managed to tell the story of Battle Pope that you wanted to tell?
I still have some stories I'd like to tell. There's still some Battle Pope in my back pocket. I get there's fans out there that enjoy Battle Pope, and Battle Pope is still in print if anyone out there wants to check it out. It's totally available. You can get it on Amazon. It's all over the place.
Very excited. Did it trades? Collected?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
No, well, when Walking Dead hit, I got to do like a big color reprint. And
that's exciting.
Yeah.
How much happens between Battle Pope and self-publishing and your beginning to Walking Dead happening with Image? It's like, how many books were you writing over those years?
Oh, I mean, I would only do like a few issues of each one, but I probably did 10 different series between mm-hmm. Battle Pope and Walking Dead.
Did you have any sense when Walking Dead started that it was going to be more special in terms of how successful and how long running it would be? When you started, did you have that sense of, oh, this is different than the previous 9?
I didn't know if it would be successful, and I definitely didn't know it would be as successful as it became, but I did honestly have a sense of, oh my God, I feel like this is a really good story. Mm. You know, like I had this thought, like, you know, like when you're working on something and you're like, man, if I didn't do this, I'd be really into this. Like I had that really, you
That's
know,
a good
strongly.
Feeling.
And so I thought, you know, if it found an audience, people might like it. But
I don't know if I read this in the first issue or maybe more likely the first trade, you explaining that your goal when you set out was to, unlike a zombie movie that has sort of a beginning, middle, and end, mm-hmm. that you wanted to sort of tell this open-ended what life would be after a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the necessity of that is that you would have to have a long-running book. If you only ran for 3 issues, that experiment would have failed.
Right.
So are you must feel a great satisfaction that not only is the book run as long as it has, but that the TV show is also sort of seems to be accomplishing that as well.
Yeah, I mean, lucky, I think, is the word. Like, I feel super lucky, super fortunate, you mm-hmm. know? When I did write that in the back of the first issue, I didn't know that we were going to last past issue 6.
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, the whole, like, Laurie-Shane love triangle that makes up the first 2 seasons of the show is 6 issues of the comic. Because I was like, got to get this done so I can, you know, tell some kind of a story before it's canceled. But yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that fans still love it to this day and, you know, the show's doing as well as it's doing or the books are doing as well as they're doing is nuts.
So you got, obviously, Walking Dead is a TV show. There's a lot of the Marvel, both movies, TV, DC movies, TV. It has this explosion of comics as pop culture made life easier for you. Do you feel like more doors are open now as a comics creator?
I'm wealthier.
Yeah, that's great.
So that's nice. But
I am very genuinely happy that I want all comic book creators to be wealthy.
I don't.
You all right?
No, I'm very selfish.
You want the
There's not
order.
Enough for all of us.
Right,
I mean, come on.
You want there to be food on their table. You just don't want them to be living the high life.
Not too much food, but. But no, it's great. I mean, I as a medium, you know, and I love the comics medium. Like, I think that the respect it gets now is awesome. I think that, you know, the fact that Comic-Con is this, like, giant pop culture event. And I know people complain about, like, oh, movies and TV have taken over. But all the comic stuff is still there. They've just built a massive, like, city of other stuff around it. And, you know, now the comics get more attention because of it. And, you know, I think it's great.
How far into The Walking Dead run were you before it got options as a TV series?
Well, I mean, It got optioned by NBC like 2 years prior to the show actually happening. I shouldn't talk about that here.
Didn't go well. That's fine. Look, but, obviously, I don't think NBC has any regrets. They wish you well, but it just wasn't a fit.
Yeah, I know. I regret it.
We're not looking for hits.
But so anyway, NBC made a huge mistake. And but no, that happened maybe 4 years into the run.
So you're like, so you're about like 40, 50 issues in, and basically somebody says, hey, then we want to make a TV show out of this.
Yeah.
And so you develop it for one network, and you don't shoot a pilot, I'm assuming?
No, didn't shoot a pilot. But it was Frank Darabont wrote a pilot for NBC.
Got it.
And then that pilot script kind of sat on a shelf for a few years until AMC came around. And
while it was on a shelf, had you sort of given up on it being a TV show? Did you just sort of recommit yourself?
I'd given up on it before it sat on a shelf. Like, I was in Kentucky. The book was doing like exceptionally well for a comic. And I was just like, yeah, great. Good luck with it. Like, let me know if it happens, because I had it drilled into my head over many, many years. Like, I would get calls on books that I had done, like Battle Pope got made into a little like online animated series. And, I'd had things happen, but you know, it's like lightning striking. And so I'd get these calls and be like, yeah, sure. Right. Yeah.
And so how involved were you with shooting the pilot with AMC? Were you on set? Were you there for...
Well, once it started happening, I got real excited. And I would go to location scouts. Like, right. I was in the way. Always there. I was always in the way.
Got you. So in a 1 to 10, how happy was the rest of the group to have you around? Would you say?
I'm thankfully not aware of what that number is.
That's good. Self-awareness can be very costly at times like that. Yeah. And so the show, before America saw it, you saw the pilot, did you feel like, oh, wow, this is a good adaptation of my show?
I was very thrilled. Yeah. I mean, it's got that great Lenny James as Morgan.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew Lincoln, everybody's amazing. But Morgan's story in that pilot, I think, really cemented what The Walking Dead was in such a succinct and beautiful way. It's this great like 8-minute story in the middle of the episode where, you know, his wife's been turned into a zombie and he gets this gun from the police station and is going to shoot her and then is unable to shoot her. And he's very emotional about it. And that little vignette in the episode is not in the comics. And so being able to see everything kind of truncated into that little moment. And I was just like, oh, you know, this really tells the audience exactly what it is we're trying to accomplish, like right here and right here. So it turned out pretty good.
That's nice that you're admitting there was something that wasn't in your comic that made it good. Because I feel like...
Well, listen.
Right, you gave them the tools. No, but there must be that. You have to, as a creator in one medium, I'm sure you suggest things, but you also probably have to let go at some point and realize another medium has to try to do other things.
The stuff that's not in the comic is like almost the only things I care about on the TV show, you know? Because the comic is, you know, I've been living that for 16 years now, and I'm just like... Yeah, it's great. Yeah, cool. Oh, you did that thing. That's cool. That turned out great. Awesome. But then when there's new stuff put into the show, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like that makes it different. And that makes me excited because it actually interests me.
Well, that's nice. Have you felt...
Try not to sound so dismissive.
No. I think it's really nice. I mean, it's not better than nice, but it's nice.
Okay.
It's pleasant. Okay. It's pleasant that you feel that way. No, have you felt a different pressure writing the comic once it became a TV show and once... There was this obviously greater amount of attention on it.
I try to ignore it as much as possible just because the comic existed and, you know, big at the TV show. And I don't want the existence of the show to change what I do with the comic because I feel like that would be, you know, a disservice to to the story I'm trying to tell in the comic. And so, you know, I try to keep it out of my head as much as possible. But the fun side effect of that is that I come up with an idea like, oh, what if there was this guy that like pretended to be royalty and he had like a tiger as a pet? Now, if I had had that idea and the show didn't exist, I probably would have said, well, that's kind of lame. Like, I don't know, like it's not really realistic to have a tiger as a pet. And I don't know if the comic, like, it's taking it into a pretty weird place if I got a tiger walking around. But because the show existed, in my head, I'm like, no, you're only saying that because you think it's going to be hard to put a tiger in the show. Just put a tiger in that comic, man. And that drive to not, you know, sell out or not like worry about how the show is happening makes me do weirder and weirder stuff because in the back of my head, I'm like, you're only thinking that because you're worried about the show. Just do it.
And I bet the show is thrilled that you're still taking nothing. I would be disappointed for them if the source material all of a sudden got more careful.
Right.
Because what I think makes the show so great is that the source material was audacious in the first place. So.
Yeah. But if anything, the show is making the source material crazier, which is making it very hard to produce the show now, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah. You set, I'm always curious talking to writers, to make sure you get stuff done, you set goals for yourself. How do you go about each day what you're going to get written?
I try to, it's kind of like a depression loop.
Uh-huh.
Like I want to give myself a goal that I know I can't reach.
Oh, interesting. So
like sometimes I'll have this thing where I'm like 6 pages, I'm going to write 6 pages today. And then I'll sit down and I'll have like a really great 2 or 3 hours and I'll write 6 pages. And so then I'm like, I think I could write 10 pages today.
Yeah,
I'm going to write 10. And then the goal changed from the goal I accomplished to the goal that is not going to work. And so by the end of the day, I'm like, I suck. I only wrote 7 pages today, as opposed to being like, I won. I wrote an extra page.
So you're aware of this, and yet you are unable to change it.
Yeah. I understand how much torment it brings me, but it keeps me productive. And so I feel like it's worth it.
Oh, I see. So at the end of the day, you'd rather be productive and miserable than satisfied and have like a page less.
Right.
I get it. I've been there. So you married?
Yes.
I'm married as well. It's wonderful.
I mean, we're being recorded.
Yeah, we're being recorded. No, but genuinely, one thing is...
Genuinely love my... No, I'm kidding. I do love my wife.
So my wife and I have shared one positive shared comic book experience.
Okay.
Yeah, we read one comic together.
Okay.
And...
it wasn't mine.
No, it wasn't yours. I tried to find something I thought she
was. Was it Saga? You're going to say it was Saga?
No, it was Saga.
Why
the
Last
Man?
Lock and Key.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
She dug Lock and Key. Maybe Why the Last Man? Maybe she'd like that. I don't know. I might want to try to like just sit on my win here and not push it. Does your wife read your work?
Nope.
Ever tried?
She pretended to, I think, early on.
Okay.
And she maybe read like the first few issues of Walking Dead. And,
okay.
Yeah. But
just
doesn't
wasn't
enjoy
for her.
It. Doesn't like comics. Doesn't like reading the balloons. Doesn't like looking at the pictures.
Yeah. You know, I remember really trying to get my brother into comics, and he just hated the balloons.
It sucks because when you love comics, you can't comprehend how someone could not fall in love with the medium. But
it is then when someone explains why they think the balloons are dumb, it's very hard to defend it.
Wait, what was that explanation?
Well, just my brother saying, I just don't like, I think reading text and balloons is stupid. And comics. And
For what reason? What's stupid about the balloons?
Well, he was just basically saying,
What's wrong with your brother?
Look, defend it. Defend why balloons aren't stupid.
What's wrong with balloons?
Well, that's
it's
this
a
isn't
circle
a defense.
Drawn around the
yeah, no,
words
the, it's
to,
a balloon.
So the words
you're
are
just
visible.
Describing a balloon.
You're making the words visible. If there were no balloon there, they would be lost in the art.
For whatever reason, he didn't like the balloons. Your wife doesn't like.
Too?
Hey, your wife doesn't like the balloons either. Why are you going after my brother?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
So, but you guys obviously, you were doing comics when you met.
Yes.
So that's interesting that you guys.
Well,
left.
No, I actually started doing comics after we like while we were dating.
Oh,
I think was when I started.
Okay, so
yeah,
because
we've been married for almost 16 years.
Oh, that's great.
So and we've been together for a long time. So yeah, she was there during the. Why is my husband staying up till 2 a.m. working on comic books when it makes him no money?
Yeah.
Like, we're going broke. What is wrong with this human being? So those were the fun years.
I'm glad she stuck around for success part.
I'm glad she did too.
And do you guys, we recently moved, my wife and I, and so I actually, she made her quest to sort of thin out the herd a little on my comics.
Oh, God.
I mean, I put them in boxes and put them in storage,
yeah.
But there was not, again, this is Manhattan real estate. You don't have a ton of square footage for comics. So it was try to pick the winners. Where do yours live? Do you have a ton of physical comics?
Yes. When we moved out to LA, I kept the house we had in Kentucky because, Kentucky houses are worth like $8. So, so I have a basement there that has... I'm going to say like 40 long boxes, but
that's not bad.
It's not, it could be 100. So
I
think a box holds like 200 comics. So
yeah,
it's a bit.
I had four. I had to put four in storage, but I've also my
four long boxes
when I first moved to New York and it was the first time I moved to New York for SNL. It was the first time I had disposable income that I could throw away on comics. Pretty much every time my parents would visit me from New Hampshire, which is having parents in New Hampshire is like having a home in Kentucky. It's a place where you can keep comics.
I would just
send them home with two long boxes pretty much every time. And I think parents, it's very, it's heartbreaking to them when they realize they're not going up in value. The comics that I've been putting in long boxes, you know, none of them are, you know.
No, mine are almost completely worthless.
Yeah, but, you know. I would say they've degraded in cost from the face value.
Maybe, maybe.
I want to ask about pacing, okay. Especially it seems like now, even more so with TV shows than with comics, every episode is sort of fine-tooth comb. This was slow. This one paid off. This was a thrill a minute. Do you think the audience sometimes has a bit of a unreasonable thirst for action and plot moving forward, and there's less of a patience for slow storytelling?
I don't, because I feel like it's always been that way. I think that, you know, when movies were slow paced and TVs were slow paced, and I mean, you need to have a mix, or the fast paced stuff doesn't have an effect. So you need to have that, you know, like X-Files would have a finale where you'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe what happened. And then they'd have like four episodes where you're like, oh my God, there's nothing going on. Like, what's going on? And those episodes are essential, you know, because that's when you get to know the characters. That's when you fall in love with the characters, so that when things ramp up, you have that investment. And I think that, you know, it seems like people are less welcoming of that kind of roller coaster ride now, but it's just because of social media and because we have greater access to people's thoughts and feelings. You know, people were at the water cooler complaining about it in the 80s and we never heard about it. But now everyone is, you know, on my phone yelling directly at me. It's a wonderful world we live in.
So, Walking Dead, we talked about your new comic on the show. How many other things are you doing at any given time? Or is that kind of where you're at?
I don't keep a count.
Yeah.
So it's a bit, but I don't know. I mean, I have, you know, a few TV projects on the back burner and things that I'm working on, like pilots and things that I pick at. And then I have, you know, a number of comic book projects that I keep going at all times.
Do you still have time to read and enjoy comics as a consumer?
Oh, definitely. I mean, because, you know, you're on the toilet.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, what else?
You can't, you know. No one can be so successful they don't have to be on the toilet.
Yeah, I don't get a lot of work done on the toilet. So, so you know.
And do you still buy hard copies when you buy your comics?
I do buy hard copies. I buy collections in hard copy for the most part. I don't buy a lot of single issues in hard copy, but I tell you what, this future where you can sit down on the toilet and on your iPad, buy a comic book while you're on the toilet and read the comic.
It's really
like,
good.
It's like, oh my God, the future is where you can go to a comic shop while you're sitting on the toilet. Like,
it's pretty great.
Oh, it makes up for everything else.
Yeah.
Not really.
No, I think so. We're going to end it there with, because I feel like not enough is being talked about how good the present is. And I think that's for everybody listening.
That's
there are a lot of things that are negative about the present, but one of the good things is you can buy a comic on the toilet.
Yeah, you can buy an album while you're walking with your phone and just be like, I want to listen to this now. Boom, done.
There you go. Well, hopefully we've given something for people to smile about this Halloween. Thanks for being here, Robert. Thank you, Bone. Perfect arc. Closed it.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and Tumblr. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night with Seth Meyers at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.